afternoon, and welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss self-care and integrated health. How much are we affected by the things that we smell? Is there a science to scent? We're bombarded by fragrances everywhere we go. Perfumes, air fresheners, fabric softeners, soaps, detergents, carpet fresh. Scented products are everywhere. Some individuals have even developed a sort of hypersensitivity from the overuse of artificial fragrances, and they become ill in the presence of them. We'll talk about the difference between natural and synthetic fragrances today. But what is the origin of our attraction to scent? Since early civilization, humans have used plant medicine for healing. A component of herbal medicine is the use therapeutically of essential oils from plants. Joining me today to explore the medicinal use of essential oils and aromatherapy is my guest, medical aromatherapist Julia Fisher. She's here live in the studio with me with a box of fragrances. Before I introduce her, I just want to do a very brief editorial about an article that was on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle. I think it's also in all of the Associated Press newspapers. There's yet another study that's been done. I have no idea what's behind this stuff that's going on, but there is another study published, and it's right prominently on the front page, that says that using estrogen does not look as though it's heart protective for elderly women. Now, there are a number of things about this study that are suspicious or odd, and there are an awful lot of studies that show that estrogen is heart protective. The two main things that are disturbing about this study is that as you read the article, toward the very bottom of the article, again, what they did was they were using estrogen, and again, we don't know, they were using Pempro and things like that, and Premarin with Provera. So what they were using is the synthetic form of progesterone, synthetic progestins. And as I've said on the show endlessly, and after the last study that was reported on in the Associated Press, natural progesterone is different from synthetic progestins. The molecular structure is altered in synthetic progestins like Provera, and they don't perform the same way. There have been numerous studies done recently that show that progestins, synthetic progestins, interfere with the heart protective effects of estrogen. The most famous study, the largest study, was done at the Oregon Primate Center by Kent Hermsmeyer. There was a follow-up study that replicated his results. These products, these synthetic progestins, seem not only to not be protective to the tissues in terms of cancer, but they seem to be promoting cancer, and they also interfere with the heart protective effects of estrogen. So this study that's reported on should not make you nervous. It's just simply not a fair thing to do to test this sort of situation using a synthetic progestin. We know from other studies that have been done, primarily this one at Oregon Primate Center, that the progestins are interfering with the protective effects of estrogen. Now, whether or not estrogen is in fact heart protective isn't clear, but it looks as though it is from the way that it works biochemically in the body and from more studies that have been done in the past. So don't panic if you're using progesterone, natural progesterone, with your estrogen. Do not take unopposed estrogen. I do not think that that's a good thing to do. Prudent use of hormones, checking saliva levels to make sure that you're taking the right amount, and getting your hormones from a compounding pharmacy so that you're getting natural hormones, meaning they match what's made in your body, and making sure that you have a balance in the ratio of your hormones and you're not just taking estrogen without checking to see if you need it, and not taking gobs of progesterone because you may only need a little dab, and then adding in whatever else that you need should be fine. I mean, these things have been done for just decades in Europe and whatnot, so there's plenty of research to support the prudent and careful use of hormones if that's what you choose to do. Don't be alarmed by these studies that are coming out in the paper. The other suspicious thing is that they studied women that were elderly, that were already heart attack candidates. These were women with heart disease. So how can you tell if it's protective if you slap these people on estrogen after they already had heart disease? I mean, that's an odd thing to do anyway. So don't worry about these studies, not yet anyway. I'll keep you posted. Let me introduce my guest, Julia Fisher, and thank her for coming over to be with us in person today. Julia Fisher has 12 years of experience practicing aromatherapy as an instructor, a consultant, and as the national educator for OSHA D USA, and I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this right, Tiferet International, for whom she now writes texts and consumer product literature. Julia lives and practices in Northern California. Thanks for coming over. Do we have a mic on for Julia? Huh? Try that again. I'm not hearing her. Do you? Huh? We may have to move you to the other mic. Do we have to move her over here? Yeah, everybody should just be patient. Why don't you just move your chair around and we'll try this mic. See, we're having trouble getting this mic that Julia is on hot. So, I should mention that the reason that I wanted to do this show is because, partly because of what I just said, which is that, in the intro, is that many people are getting ill from the use of synthetic fragrances, and the fragrances are ubiquitous at this point. So I want to go over, among other things, the differences between the synthetic and natural, but there are plenty of things I want to go over first. Do we have a hot mic on Julia? Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, there she is. See that? Now we can hear her. That works a lot better. What we might want to start out with is just to describe or explain what makes this school of herbal or plant medicine different from what we think of traditionally. I mean, traditionally we think of the sorts of stuff where people are taking tinctures or extracts of plants. In this case, we're using the essences of plants. And what is the main difference here? Well, I mean, I've started to even say what it is. Let me let you do it, though.
Right. The substance we're using in aromatherapy is the essential oil, which is typically, for most plants, a distilled essence, and it's highly concentrated, between 75 and 100 times as concentrated as any other plant form, tea or tincture of any sort. So it's the particular fragment or fraction of the plant that we're using that makes aromatherapy different, as well as its aromatic nature, that all of these plant essences are from aromatic plants, and they do have a particular fragrance that's unique to each one.
What is the distinction, though? If you're approaching this from a prophylactic or medicinal standpoint, you're trying to prevent illness or you're treating an illness, using it therapeutically, what is the main difference between inhaling a fragrance or using an essential oil orally than using the other forms?
Well, the other forms have completely different chemical compounds. So, for example, when you extract an essential oil, you get only the volatile, very light aromatic compounds. And when you extract a tincture, you may get some heavier compounds. It varies from plant to plant, but the ultimate outcome is that this volatile oil doesn't appear in most tinctures or teas except in very small amounts. So it's highly concentrated and has often a different aspect, a different healing effect than a whole herb or an herb tincture.
Okay, so what we're really saying is that the chemistry is different.
Chemistry is different.
Yeah, we're dealing with volatile compounds which are different chemically from the extracted active ingredients that are used medicinally in herbs. Okay, so why would you be more apt to use essential oils or aromatherapy? You know, I'm saying essential oils are also consumed. You can also take them orally. But why would you use that versus, I mean, what sorts of cases would you use aromatherapy? Well, you use probably aromatherapy for everything because that's your
that's
favorite
my
thing.
Fuel, yeah. Yes. First of all, I wouldn't throw off very lightly that you orally ingest essential oils.
Okay.
Mostly because I feel very committed to bringing up the point that there's a huge range in quality or what is the public perception of what is an essential oil versus what is a synthetic fragrance.
Okay, and so why don't we back up?
Oh, well, that's a good thing to do. We have to establish that essential oils are from plants. They are not synthetic chemicals. They are not perfumes that have been created in a laboratory. And as such, they have the compounds and predictable chemical compounds that we are looking for and that have been studied for decades in Europe, in the Soviet Union, and also here in the States.
Well, not only are we concerned about whether they're natural or synthetic, which we should probably go into a little more here, but it even gets more complicated because many essential oils that are available over the counter now are not organic, or in the extraction process, things are done to sort of make them go farther, to sort of add on to them so that they're not so expensive.
Yes, that's true. That's the nature of what is called the flavor and fragrance industry, that most of these fragrant essences are really geared toward or directed towards soaps, lotions, perfumes, cleaning fluids, and they're not intended necessarily for their medicinal value. I mean, one of the most sinister aspects of that is that any olfactory research that's been done, smell research, is certainly not funded by the aromatherapy world, mm-hmm. but is funded by huge corporate entities which have an investment in discovering how to manipulate consumer behavior. So that these synthetic fragrances that we get are there to make us buy more or stick with a certain product. You smell the leather when you open the magazine, see the Gucci bag, and you buy it. 1, 2, 3. That's the mm-hmm. direct access.
Yeah, except it's kind of backfiring slightly, although a lot of people are not aware of it. Most people react to some degree to synthetic fragrances, to the chemicals in synthetic fragrances. And in fact, I had an experience that I've shared before on the air, which is I had a friend who used cologne, and I said, not around me, you're not going to be able to do this. So he stopped using the cologne. This was years and years ago. And he continued to smell of the cologne. He was working in toxic cleanup in a lab, so he took a sample of his cologne, and it was full of the most dangerous carcinogenic material, toluene, benzene, all these things. I always say toluene incorrectly, but in any case, people get the idea. And what we discovered was that the reason that he was continuing to smell was because it had, of course, gone right into his bloodstream, and he was literally still metabolizing it and throwing it out of his sweat glands and stuff.
We like to say in the more positive way that when you use essential oils, which are volatile and penetrate directly into the bloodstream when you apply them topically or whether you inhale them, that the effects do stay in the body for up to 3 days. So when you receive an aromatherapy treatment or you treat yourself with essential oils, you're getting the benefit of that effect for as long as the body can hold on to those molecules until it eliminates them.
Well, and the difference here is that there are substances that can be that can optimize the function of your organs, and there are substances that will be destructive. And the liver, of course, is the place where everything sort of ends up to be sorted out. If you're putting in a synthetic material that has a toxic quality to it, the liver has to work extra hard to find a way to make this less dangerous for you. So, and it's very damaging. And people don't realize that when they smell stuff, this is something I said to you on the phone, it goes into your lungs absorb this, and it goes into your bloodstream. So it's whether you're breathing it or putting it on your skin, it's going into your bloodstream. Always, always, always.
That's right. So your other question was, why would you choose essential oils? Why would you choose aromatherapy when there's other forms of medicine? And that involves taking a look at the parameters and the effectiveness of essential oils versus these other items. And typically, because it is a holistic practice, you use them in conjunction with any other thing that can be useful or helpful to you. But essential oils are extremely potent antibacterial agents, anti-inflammatory agents, antiviral agents. They work against parasites, and they have a long list of really potent effects that you would choose them for.
Over an extract. Why don't you go ahead and discuss a bit about the extraction techniques and the way that it's going to change the effect that the oil. In other words, there are oils, as I said, that are inexpensive. What is the differential here?
Well, let's just reduce it to the essential oils, which are truly steam distilled, because there are many other extraction methods for different plants. But in steam distillation, you start with a plant. Optimally of best quality, meaning either organically grown, cultivated, or harvested from the wild. And this plant it's a physical process put into a still, which is an ancient unit used in alchemy from years ago. And this steam passing through the plant material will and the pressure that builds in the still creates a volatile essence that can then be condensed and collected. This is, if you were to take it right out of the still, this is the true, genuine essential oil that you would like to see on store shelves.
So this is the condensation at the top is sort of very carefully removed, and that's the oil.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate aspect comes at this point where if you're not collecting this essential oil from a farmer, grower, distiller, or through an aromatherapy company who specializes in purveying these items, then you typically get this pure essential oil sent to various brokerages or processing houses, and this is well known in France, where these products are then extended or quote-unquote standardized with various compounds that are known to already exist in that product. They can be of natural origin or they can be of synthetic origin, and these are done because in the flavor and fragrance industry, a square standard aroma is necessary. You wouldn't have the fragrance of your favorite perfume change every 6 months because of the variations in nature.
And oh, I see.
So
that's,
frankly,
that's supposed to be the reason. The other reason, though, is that they're sort of thinning out these things and making them go farther. No,
exactly. I mean, it's well known that rosemary in the open market, 1 ton of rosemary can typically be stretched to reach 8 tons in the marketplace without very obvious detection. So that's pretty scary.
I just want to remind people that they're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Elena Berman, and I'm live in the studio with Julia Fisher, who is a medical aromatherapist, and we're talking about, at this point, the differences between synthetic and natural, and then organic and non-organic. And then it gets even further, because there's even the question of which part of the plant is being used, because that will change the effect.
Right.
And different plants, too.
Right. There's many different species of different plants. Each one has its own chemical composition, which to the aromatherapist has very different applications, and that's important to know.
Is there a general, can you give an example of something that's commonly used that people would be surprised about?
I think eucalyptus is a pretty common example. There's well over 600 species of eucalyptus on the planet. We have about 5 or 7 of them that are used very commonly in aromatherapy. The one that most people are familiar with is the Eucalyptus globulus species, which is typically used for lung congestion, and it's an excellent mucolytic. And it smells very camphorous and is very sharp to a lot of people's noses. And then there's a variety of eucalyptus called radiata, Eucalyptus radiata, which has none of the camphor compounds, and is very soft and actually much gentler and much more useful for children. Has a strong antiviral compound. And there's a third eucalyptus you see very commonly called the Citriodora species, or Eucalyptus lemon, which has nothing to do with the lungs whatsoever, but it's a great anti-inflammative and is used for arthritis, has a very lemony character. And that's the plant itself. Nothing's been added to it. It's the extract of the essential oil of that particular species that has that character.
Well, let's say, though, that a consumer has read somewhere that eucalyptus should, you know, that they should, instead of getting Vicks Vapor Rub, they should put a couple drops of essential oil into their vaporizer, you know, to help them to air. Well, maybe this is not even the way you would like to see this delivered,
mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that, too. But so they trot themselves down to the store, and there's usually not an enormous array of essential oils. Even in the health food store, there's usually a limited array. And I'm wondering how people can even begin to make, I mean, we can make recommendations about which brands we like, but rather than do that, what are the sorts of questions that people should be asking, and how can they determine? I mean, is it just a case of you buy the most expensive essential oil you can find? I mean, that's disturbing.
Well, it is to some degree, but you pay for what you get.
In this case.
It is, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are forced to superficialize aromatherapy, and it's been very painful for me, as you can imagine, in the last years in involving myself in very serious study with some of the top people in the world, to walk into a mainstream store and see, you know, Glade air freshener aromatherapy version or a candle for slimming. And I just, you know, I want to throw up. It's
well, but even as people get smarter about, okay, I know that those are not real. Those are synthetic, whether they're saying aromatherapy. Now they've gotten on the bandwagon and they know, they see that word, so they're using it, but it may not be a natural odor. But even when you're perusing the shelf of essential oils that are available in your health food store, there's going to be a range. And you're going to see eucalyptus is used as an example. And you go, huh, So
I mean, I see very smart people not be able to determine the difference between various lines. And typically, your safest option, unfortunately, is to look at the higher-priced oils. That seems to be, from my knowledge of what's out there, those are the best oils that are purveyed. The less expensive oils range from being totally synthetic to semi-synthetic, and with claims mm-hmm. of 100% purity, mm. All analyzed and, you know, compartmentalized and, you know.
God, Julia, are you saying that they're lying out there?
They're lying. I know.
Yes, they are. Mm. Okay, so, you know, we might want to just make one more pitch about this business of, because we're actually saying to people, buy the expensive oils. Why don't you, we explained a little bit about the extraction process, but why don't you explain, so why don't you just go ahead and reiterate why they're expensive?
Well, just like you were earlier talking about the natural versus the synthetic estrogens or progesterone, there's a huge difference between nature and synthetic chemistry.
Except with natural estrogens, they're not actually squeezed out of a plant. They are synthesized in a lab, but they match the molecular structure.
Okay, there's a difference there.
Yeah, there's a difference there. So that's not a good example.
Okay.
But
the molecules of essential oil exist in a plant for a communication purpose. They communicate, even before there were humans, they existed to communicate with other species and for their own metabolic processes and survival.
Even to protect themselves, yeah.
And to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. It was actually, some people call them, it's actually Gottfossé, the person who coined the word aromatherapy, who alluded to the fact of essential oils as hormones, plant hormones.
Oh, certainly. Mm-hmm.
And another French doctor, Daniel Penuel, who talks about essential oils as the immune system of mankind. Since the beginning of time, plants have housed us, clothed us, fed us, been our medicines and our cosmetics, and we have a relationship with them that is far more than just romantic, but we are built along the same biosynthetic pathway, the same chemical compounds. Therefore, they speak to us in very direct and very effective ways without side effects, without harmful effects, without compounds in them that the body cannot metabolize or process in any way or recognize.
What I'm hearing is that the processing of essential oils in a way that maintains the more, sort of organic milieu or the integrity of what's actually there without interfering or adding to it is a more expensive process because you get less oil from each distillation or extraction. You don't get as much oil, so if you're maintaining it, or if you're even differentiating between different parts of the plant, then it gets to be quite expensive. You get much less oil. Am I right?
True. If put it this way, the price of a true essential oil reflects the reality of its agriculture, its processing, the various trade costs and international labor, water, fuel that happens to happen there. It's a real reflection of the actual process versus something that's been stretched, adulterated, or diluted to meet a market cost.
Should we be concerned about the use of wild plants? Are we running out of wild plants? And since you have to use so many of them to do this, I mean, should we be concerned about that?
We should be concerned about endangering plants. But there are many plants on the planet which are naturally abundant. There are others that really replace other kinds of land use in a much better way, much better use of the land than, for example, cattle grazing or the proliferation of wineries here in Northern California.
Well, which, and also certain kinds of crops put methylbromide on the ground before, like grapes, to kill everything and sterilize the soil. So,
so it's an excellent use of land to plant some of these things, and other than the ones that are
those are planted rather than
mm-hmm.
the wild ones. Yeah.
But the wild ones, in abundance, if they're what's called ethically harvested or ethically wildcrafted, it's a perfectly reasonable act.
You mentioned a list. You sort of went down a list very quickly of the primary uses, the medical sort of medicinal uses for essential oils. Inflammation. What were some of the other ones you mentioned?
Antibacterial, mm-hmm. antiviral, mm-hmm. antiparasitic, antifungal.
So I'm wondering whether or not there are a type. If you can generate, probably not. What types of symptoms people might be most inclined to want to? I mean, clearly, if you've got a cold and your chest is stuffed up, that makes sense. But are there sort of chronic pathologies that respond very well to the use of, that you'd like to mention, that respond really well to aromatherapy?
Absolutely. One of the most obvious would be skin problems, because the topical use of these plant essences are fabulous in turning around all kinds of infectious skin conditions or rashes or inflammations on the surface of the skin.
For example,
psoriasis.
Really responds well to this stuff.
Keeping in mind that it is holistic practice. In other words, diet has to be looked at and other kinds of detoxification. You know, just slapping on an essential oil without changing any other kind of behavior is, a setup for failure. But the essential oils are extremely effective at correcting this kind of situation on the skin. Infection in general is one of the shining lights of essential oils, especially in the lungs. Because these essential oils are volatile and you can inhale them, they're one of the few substances that can get into the lungs simply by breathing. So they're very effective at covering a lot of surface area and dissolving mucus, as well as killing some of the bacteria in the lungs, while leaving anything that is innate to the body, the healthy flora, for example, in the colon, leaves that intact.
Yeah, because you're not sending it through the digestive mm-hmm. system. I would think this is very important for HIV and AIDS.
There are a lot of studies being done in Europe right now with that, with HIV and essential oils in particular, in stimulating immunoglobulin production.
Any others that sort of really stand out in terms of, I mean, you mentioned skin and inflammation in general and antiviral.
Right. Pain of arthritis. I have to say, generally, people come to essential oils unexpectedly sometimes because they don't know of it as an option for stress and relaxation.
Yeah, I would think
and
so.
And a real deep connection with nature that an herb tincture just can't give you.
We're going to need to break for a second here. You're listening to Julia Fisher, who is a medical aromatherapist. We're talking about the medicinal use of essential oils from plants. This is Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm health integrationist Lena Berman. When we come back, I want to talk some more about the application of the oils and how they can be used. We're talking about inhaling them. There's some cases where you can actually ingest them very cautiously. So we'll go back over some of the specifics of that. It's Your Own Health and Fitness. We're going to break for about 30 seconds and we'll return. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman with Julia Fisher, who is a medical aromatherapist. A reminder, if you miss part of today's show and you want to get a tape or you need information in general from me, you can call my information number at 707-773-4727. Or you can go to the website. You get rid of www and type in members dot, not at, dot members dot AOL dot com com / YOHAF, which are the initials of the show. Remember, no www. Julia, did you want to give out a phone number?
Yeah, you can reach me at 415-457-3673 for questions on aromatherapy.
One of the things that differentiates Western medicine or allopathic medicine from plant medicine and other more holistic therapies like homeopathy and acupuncture and things like that, energy medicine, is that you're looking at very minuscule aspects. You're looking at very intimate aspects of an individual to make a case for how to treat them. You're not just looking at symptoms. You're not treating symptomatically. You're looking at their emotional world, their history, you know, what's going on with them in every aspect and how they live. And you're working on that. So do you want to talk a little bit about how you create a case?
Sure. It's been such a blessing to work with people on their various conditions because I'm really my own best guinea pig. I've used essential oils for pretty much everything, and even if I didn't have something, I would take essential oils. But when I encounter a client with a condition, I really try to listen to what the condition is made up of, which includes a survey of their dietary regimen, you know, what they're eating every day, and if they do any physical exercise, if they're taking anything, if they're pregnant, all these kinds of things. And then we take a look at the condition. There is such a tremendous amount of research, as I mentioned, on essential oils and their effects on various conditions. So the range of essential oils that would be chosen for that condition is pretty well known. However, because essential oils are an aromatic therapy, and something that is interfacing with that client, then it is of critical importance that the person that's using these essential oils has some kind of relationship with them. There are certain oils that provoke a negative reaction in somebody. I had a student once who had been locked in her cedar closet as a child and was stuck on that particular aroma and that experience, and cedar would not be an oil I would choose for her. Knowing aromatic chemistry, there's many other alternatives to choose for somebody if they can't use a certain oil due to a smell turnoff. There are other oils that really attract people, and that would be certainly an asset because even medical doctors are talking about patient compliance. They don't take the medicines. Well, if you don't use the essential oils, you're not going to get the good outcome from your condition. But within that range of essential oils chosen for their condition, I would have that person collaborate with me and choose those oils that they want to use, and then I would formulate a protocol for them, how to apply it and how and when to use it, some dietary corrections as well.
There's also another aspect that I think you use, judging from some of the literature you gave me, which is whether a person tends to run hot, whether they tend to run cold, sort of things that are similar to taking a case in any kind of plant medicine. Don't you also have to consider, because I'm like looking at the list that you gave me of the aromatic chemistry, and certainly there are things that are going to be, like you wouldn't give something vitalizing to somebody who's already overstimulated, for instance, would you?
Well, if somebody is quote-unquote overstimulated, I'm not sure what that means, and they have an infection, then you choose an oil that addresses that infection. And basically, that is the cure for that person, regardless of whether they are overactive or.
Okay.
Or
so the answer is no, in fact, because it's more complex, is what you're saying.
Yes, it's much more complex than that.
In other words, it's more a question of applying literally the chemistry of the plant to the condition and then marrying that to the other parts of their life so that they're not sort of anecdoting their own.
Exactly. The more mature I've gotten within this field, the more I realize that it's really a short-term goal to choose an oil because it's going to be effective against this Staphylococcus bacteria, but that there is a whole person there and that they are going to respond perhaps to a plant from that has similar chemistry that will affect that condition, but maybe from a different part of the world that's more. That has more of a relationship with who that person is. A lot of things are unexplained in the practice, as well as things that are very well explained. We see this in the placebo effect, which I've had really incredible experiences in working with somebody with an oil that was not the correct oil for that condition, and yet it was very successful in treating that condition.
Well, I mean, I can see that it's complicated because if I look at, I mean, one of the things that I think is probably one of the things that bothers you about what's out there is that you can open little books and pamphlets and say, well, the lavender is relaxing, so I should do lavender, but maybe that's not even the best one to use or something? I mean, in other words, when people do it symptomatically, they run into a problem. Is that what?
Well, the attitude is what I like to call the tofu hot dog. When I became a vegetarian at 16, I didn't want a hot dog. I don't care what it was made out of. It's the mindset that we haven't changed, that we can use natural products, herbs, in the same old mindset, in the same old attitude. I just want to take something, take a pill, even though it's echinacea. So the same attitude can happen with essential oils, that when you really delve deeply into this therapy, you see, well, I can treat my wound with these oils. These are wound healing oils. It doesn't matter whether I like them or not, whether I have a sense of smell or not. But on another aspect, I can smell them. I can perceive them. There is an effect on my olfactory brain, the limbic area of
That's
my brain.
Where it's, I was going next.
It's affecting my behavior and my emotion. I can't avoid that.
Okay, well, why don't we talk about that next, which is that here we are either putting these on the skin or inhaling them into the lungs, and there is a smell, and that makes them very different from, I mean, if you use herbs, if you handle them and create your own tinctures or whatever, and you're cooking with them and whatnot, you're getting a smell and a taste. But for the most part, the most provocative way to do this is with the essential oils. And as you pointed out, the first, we have this, it's the oldest memories we have are smell memories. So it affects a very primitive part of our brain. So why don't you explain a little bit about how the addition of a smell changes the way these things, which are in a sense neurotransmitters again, are communicating with our cells, how it makes them different, how they communicate differently, how they affect our nervous system, for instance.
Well, okay, back to the original sense of smell. Actually, the first name for the primitive brain was often referred to as the smell brain or the rhinoencephalus. And this was an allusion to how important that sense of smell was to our very survival.
Exactly.
That we use the sense of smell to detect bad food or to find food, to select mates, to find our children, to bond. All kinds of, human chemistry going on between each other, subconsciously. Still today, there are tremendous amount of behaviors that are a result of perhaps below threshold perception of aromas. In fact, this is one of the directions that olfactory research has gone, where a certain aroma is piped into a room below perception threshold, meaning that the person is not aware that they are smelling it, yet it's present there, and they will reveal different brainwave patterns occurring on the basis of having that smell, different behavior patterns on the basis of having that smell there, even though the person is not detecting it. We know this aspect from being attracted to a person. We call it we had chemistry together, pheromones.
Yeah. Well, it's also, actually, we are perceiving their biochemistry when we smell them.
Absolutely, we are. And this, because we are so overstimulated visually through our ears and through other channels, maybe the smell is not such a good indicator as it used to be. If we would pay attention to that, perhaps that would be
very
useful.
People's sense of smell has been numbed, I think, to some extent. But what you're saying is very interesting, because it means that there is a non-verbal reaction. There is a response or a reaction occurring to people on a non-verbal level. And this may explain why some people are literally more reactive in situations. They don't even know that that's happening. They're not even aware that their behavior is changing. You could certainly see this if you try to have a conversation with somebody who's just walked through Macy's. Mm-hmm. With the formaldehyde and the perfume and the whole thing, and they don't even know that they're not functioning, that their lifter rockets are not firing. So many people are not conscious of this. Some people become more conscious of it as they become more acquainted with their own terrain and start cleaning up their lives and take care of themselves. They become much more sensitive to this. But we're dealing with a nonverbal, as you say, the cedar chest was a very chilling example of these sort of nonverbal memories, in some cases very early memories too. So that it gets fairly complicated. The studies, if people wanted to read about this stuff, are there studies that are, do I have a pen in case you say something? are there books that discuss, or is it just too, it's really complicated stuff and
well,
it gets?
It depends on what the person is looking for. I mean, in aromatherapy, the range of books available now goes anywhere from astrological aromatherapy, Ayurveda and aromatherapy.
Yeah, no, I know. But what about the science of it? Because the people that listen to this show are sometimes interested in the more scientific aspect.
There are more and more texts out there. There's a couple by Dr. Kurt Schnaubelt of the Pacific Institute of Aromatherapy, Advanced Aromatherapy,
K-U-R-T,
Schnaubelt, S-C-H-N-A-U, Belt.
B-E-L-T.
And his two books, Advanced Aromatherapy and Medical Aromatherapy, are really excellent and coherent texts on the modern uses of essential oils.
Okay, I'm going to keep that out again because people probably didn't have something to write with. We're talking about two books by Dr. Kurt, K-U-R-T, Schnaubelt, S-C-H-N-A-U-B-E-L-T. And one book is called Advanced Aromatherapy, and the other book is called Medical Aromatherapy. And I will try to stick this on my website when I get home.
There's one book people shouldn't forget about, which is the original book by the man who named our field aromatherapy, René Maurice Gatfossé.
Oh, God.
Sorry about that.
Maurice, M-A-U-R-I-C-E?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the last
name? Gatfossé is G-A-T-T-E.
G-A-T-T-E.
F-O-S-S-E. And his book, written in about 1928, was the first outlining of the use of essential oils for their medical effects. And he worked on a lot of people during various wars with strong infections as antibiotics for pain relieving of amputated limbs, for terrible sexually transmitted diseases and lots of really horrible infections that occurred in the beginning of this century. And essential oils were so incredibly powerful. We've lost that.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost that. Mm-hmm. And that's where essential oils have been marginalized to lotions and bath salts.
Well, and this is, you know, you're very good at sort of taking me to my next point. One of the reasons I got interested in doing this show is because I purchased a product made by one of the companies that you consult for that was described to me as an alternative to the sorts of things that are being sold to women and men to help to sort of heal some of the effects of sun damage or aging on the skin. You know, there's all this Cell-X, and there's all this Retin-A and all this kind of... and, of course, it makes perfect sense that you can go all the way back to nature and find oils that have these sorts of effects of healing the skin, the surface of the skin, and rehydrating it and having both a healing and exfoliating sort of effect. And I purchased the product, and I've been very pleased with not just the way it works, because it does seem to soften. I don't think I look like I had surgery or anything, but it certainly seems to soften the effects of sun and stuff on the face. But in addition, it is, as you say, an extraordinarily lovely material to put on your face. I mean, it has this combination of oils, including rose and various things, and it's just so pleasant. That I've been thrilled, and you use such a small amount of it that it doesn't end up being expensive. And I really didn't want to use any of the garbage that I knew was the pharmacies, pharmaceutical products. So,
one of the most important aspects of aromatherapy that we tend not to talk about in our efforts to be taken seriously scientifically is that it has a tremendous, it's a therapy with tremendous beauty, and it's one thing to be manipulated by corporate sense, and it's another thing to be influenced or presented with nature's perfumes in a way that is so gracious and giving, the way you walk by a honeysuckle bush and it grabs you and you have to stick your nose into it. At the Good Earth in Fairfax, where I'm working part-time, there's a gardenia on the counter there, and every single person walking out the door bends over to smell the gardenia, and it's interesting because it looks like they're bowing, actually, to the great gardenia. But these scents really connect us instantly back to our source, and call it woo-woo, call it New Age. It's not. It's nature. You feel that way when you go for a walk.
People like to go, for a walk in spring in the country. And we don't have that kind of contact anymore, so we're losing that sense and sensitivity. Again, what we're talking about is the difference between chemistry when it's separated from its complementary components, and when it exists in a whole sense. You know,
part of the difficulty I have to admit is that whereas herbalists can go out into the woods, harvest a bag of nettles, and make their tea, make their medicine, make their tincture, you don't find aromatherapists tramping through the woods collecting plants and running them through the still, because you typically need hundreds of pounds of plant material. So I have observed that there is a disconnection often with people in my own field, with the plants themselves, as well as disconnection from a sensitivity to where they're grown or what they look like. But once you begin using them, it actually is that Band-Aid. It's that reconnection going back that maybe we've lost.
Well, we've all had the experience of taking some herbs and grinding them to put into soup or something, and then smelling the grinder and you know, smelling the pestle, you know. And when you take a walk, I'm sure everybody does this, when I take a walk, I pick up things and squeeze them in my fingers and smell them. I'd like to go back to some of the more specific types of one of the things that really struck me as you were talking about the limbic brain is that there must be amazing applications with aromatherapy for psychiatric symptoms.
That's not in my realm of experience. I have worked with a few people who don't really come to me for that problem. But
even depression, you don't get people coming with depression.
Well, that's true. I do get a lot of people with depression, and
well, that's psychiatric,
including myself.
Okay.
My recommendation is typically use all the oils every day. My teacher would often say that aromatherapy is not something you use when you're sick, but it's a daily practice.
Mm-hmm.
And the use of these molecules, every single one of which is an antioxidant molecule. We're all selling bottles mm-hmm. of antioxidants now. All of the essential oils are antioxidants. The use of them on a daily basis brings health and vitality to the system in every way, even if you're not using them exactly accurately.
So are you saying that even if somebody who is trying desperately not to succumb to the use of psychiatric medications went to a store that had a good quality stuff and maybe chatted with the people and experimented with some of the scents and found that some actually were comforting, that might be a way of judging whether or not it was going to be useful?
Well, I would never want to trivialize the feeling of depression to that you can take a bottle and it's really going to help.
No, I'm not saying that you're going to erase your depression using essential oils.
But I have had the experience both personally and with friends that given those melancholy moments or even a pervasive or chronic tendency towards depression or sadness, going through opening a box of oils, having a selection of oils, and using them to smell one after the other, it sends the brain waves in a different direction. It's very distracting.
Well, not only that, but you're talking about inhaling volatile chemical compounds, which in some cases are, again, neurotransmitters and are going to, I would think, aid in the production of happy chemicals in your brain.
Yes, that's not as well studied.
Really?
But
I'm really surprised. I would think that would be an obvious.
Because that is not the intention of the olfactory research is not for healing. It's for manipulation.
Oh, most of the research that's been done aside from
right.
the Rene Maurice, whose name last
well,
name?
Well,
why don't you say his last name again?
Godfosse. You know, a lot of people, modern medicine doesn't consider that research. They consider that
anecdotal.
Folklore,
yeah.
Regardless of whether these people had PhDs. If it's in another language, it doesn't exist.
Although I can't help but think that it would have a phenomenal effect on brain. And I'm not talking about just erasing a symptom of depression. I'm saying that if you're treating people with plant medicine and you're trying to recorrect an imbalance that may go back pretty far. I mean, if you're unwinding a case in the same way that you're unwinding a case in homeopathy, I would think that there would be an application. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm sort of going off on a tangent. It just struck me that because you're... And I would think that also panic disorders would be very susceptible and treatable with aromatherapy. But you mostly find yourself working with inflammation and chronic illness, people with chronic... But, of course, chronic people with chronic illness have brain symptoms,
of course.
Brain fog and stuff.
Yes, I mean, a lot of the work in aromatherapy could be considered experimental because even though there are studies about certain conditions, each person as an individual will skew a situation in some direction.
Okay, so again, you know, we haven't actually gone into depth about the actual application of these, and I'm rather guessing that dropping a few drops of eucalyptus into a vaporizer is not your favorite. But how do you like people to use? I mean, I understand that you're talking about maybe having a collection of these and opening the bottles and actually just smelling them. But what are the main ways that these are applied and used?
Well, we have to look at the word aromatherapy and unravel that perception of it that it's simply something that you inhale and smell. Because the practice of aromatherapy also would include topical use, and as you mentioned, occasional oral ingestion, suppositories, vaginal routes. But the application really depends on the condition. For example, if you had a muscle pain, torn ligament, you would not inhale an essential oil for that purpose. You would actually apply the essential oil to that area that's in pain. Same thing with a skin problem. However, if you had a lung infection, the best application would be either a chest rub or inhalation through the lungs, through the mouth, and through the nose.
How do you like them to be inhaled? Just opening a bottle, or do you like to see them diffused in with a vapor?
With steam is a good carrier. Uh-huh. There are these units called aromatic diffusers, the ones that typically have fancy bong-like pieces on them. They're called nebulizers, and they put essential oils into the air in a cold format, so you get just a pure essential oil vapor, which covers a large surface area of the lung. That would be a real ideal way for treating
infection.
Lung conditions and infection, and it has great applications also in doctor's offices, waiting rooms, or daycare centers where disease and microbes are constantly being exchanged between people. It's a very lovely way to purify air when there's a lot of people.
Well, it might also be calming to people who are frightened in those situations. So you were concerned about this business of whether or not people are going to try to ingest essential oils. So what are the cautions or protocols?
Well, number one, that person has to establish that they are using a genuine essential oil of very highest quality. And preferably that essential oil is either organically cultivated or from the wild, so it has no chemicals on it. I generally don't prescribe oral ingestion of essential oils because I like to point out that whether you put the oils on the skin or you inhale them, you are taking them internally. And typically those two avenues of taking the oils in the body are sufficient for the condition. The oral ingestion is reserved for acute conditions under the care of somebody experienced, and there are certain oils that you wouldn't take internally. It's perhaps too long an answer to tell the listening audience, you know, which
ones
not to take.
It's going to make a certain amount of sense.
Yeah. With caution is is always the case, and it's not the first line of attack you do for a condition.
Well, I think what we're saying is that you should not ingest essential oils unless you're under the care of an experienced practitioner who has specifically asked you to do so and the protocol for doing it.
That's
you should
right.
just assume that you should not do it that way. And as you just said, anything that goes on the skin or inhaled is going to get into your bloodstream. And in many cases, this is a better carrier because it goes in slowly and it's absorbed slowly, and it doesn't put as much strain on the liver
right.
or the digestive system. So
the point well made, though, about aromatherapy is that it should be what we like to call a medicine for the people, that it
available.
Right. It doesn't need to be only in the hands of the experts, the quote-unquote certified aromatherapists, but that it is an herbal medicine, that we have a lot of access to good information on it, and it should be a home care practice that you use to treat many of the simple things that you come across in your daily life with your family and your children.
Julie, why don't you give out your number again?
I'm at 415-457-3673 in Marin County.
And why don't you repeat it one more time?
415-457-3673.
And you are available for consultations?
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing I guess we can say here is that if people go into a store and they're carrying some of these good lines of essential oils. Some of them, as I just pointed out, have products that are intended. They're mixtures of oils that are intended for a specific purpose. And in many cases, not all cases, some of the stores actually, when they carry the good lines, are also have someone that knows how to explain what these assortments of oils that are what their intended use is mm-hmm. for, what the therapeutic use is. So there are some sort of reformulated things.
There are avenues into teaching people how to use the oils more therapeutically. Again, these blends that you'll find in the stores are general, so they're not customized for you. And as a person who does a lot of the store trainings and sees a constant influx of people, I can say that it's not always dependable that you can rely on a store staff for aromatherapy information, just like you can't rely on store staff for various kinds of homeopathy or other kinds of
information. But you're also saying that this is a good home medicine thing that you should explore on your own. So how do people do that then if they don't?
I think the best way to learn about it is to read, take some classes, and then to experiment on the basis of that, because you will gain personal knowledge from using
your own
the oils,
experience.
Right?
Sure. Well, I want to thank you for coming over and talking to us about this. This is, I think many people who listen to the show are already aware of this as a thing to use and have probably been dipping around in it. But it was nice to get a little bit of the specifics on it, and especially to differentiate between the different types of oils that are out there. So we've been listening to Julia Fisher, whose number we gave out numerous times. It's on my website as well. I'll put it on my website. I want to thank all of you who listened today and Lisa Ballard for taking care of the control board. If you need more information or if you want a cassette copy of the show, I do not have transcripts available. Cassette copies or information about anything in terms of the show, you can dial my information number 24 hours a day at 707-773-4727. Again, 707-773-4727. Or go to the website, delete www, type in members.aol.com/YOHAF. Next week, author and editor Douglas Abrams will be talking about his book,